Good morning, early birds. You've caught the Worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio, rounding up reporting from our newsroom and Montana Public Radio. State Health Department officials gave lawmakers an update on COVID-19 response, challenges for childcare, and how the pandemic has affected science in Montana. It's Tuesday, May 12th. I'm your host, Jess Sheldahl. Last week, the Montana State Tribal Relations Committee sent out a letter asking the public to respect and comply with travel restrictions the state's tribal governments have adopted to prevent the spread of the novel coronavirus. Kay Erickson reports.
The letter sent to state news publications encourages the public, residents and non-residents, to comply with efforts by tribal governments to restrict access to their communities. State Senator Jason Small, committee chairman, says the tribal governments are suggesting travelers use alternative routes around tribal land.
They're just trying to keep the influx of traffic at bay. They're trying to keep people out of town from pulling in just to stop or negate the spread of COVID-19, hopefully not get it here where there is such a high risk to the population just due to underlying health concerns.
Committee Vice Chair Representative Ray Peppers emphasizes the letter is not to single out any group, but to inform truckers and other travelers of why these restrictions are in place. She says the tribes are trying to protect a community that lacks adequate medical infrastructure.
If there was an outbreak in our communities, they could not handle it. And they ask that we do everything we can to prevent such an outbreak by putting in closures.
The state's most recent analysis of its COVID-19 data shows while Native Americans are not disproportionately infected with the COVID-19 illness, complications are more severe. 30% of Native Americans with the virus require hospitalization, compared to 13% of COVID patients who identify as white. Native Americans also account for a quarter of the state's deaths. I'm Kay Erickson with Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Montana is reporting 459 confirmed cases of the COVID-19 illness as of this morning, with a new case in Jefferson County identified in Sunday's round of sampling. Yesterday afternoon, Bighorn County confirmed a new case there who's recovering at home. 423 people have recovered and 20 cases are still active. 62 people have been hospitalized with 4 still in the hospital. Toole County has the most active cases with 7. State Health Department officials gave legislators an update yesterday on the agency's ongoing response to the COVID-19 pandemic. Officials say that response has a lot of moving pieces, but they're learning fast and keeping pace. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
Health Department Director Sheila Hogan told lawmakers Monday that applications for SNAP, or the federal food stamp program, jumped by 70% after stay-at-home orders were issued in late March. Staff are now helping clients over the phone, and helpline hours have been extended to handle the additional caseload. Montanans without internet or phone access can still book office meetings on an emergency basis. Hogan told members of the legislature's Children, Families, Health, and Human Services Interim Committee the agency is encouraging people to report suspected child abuse and neglect. Reported cases of abuse have declined over the past 2 months, which officials attribute to the move to online learning at schools and fewer chances for teachers to notice signs of abuse. During the oversight meeting, Todd Harwell told legislators that Montana's COVID-19 testing capability has dramatically improved over the past 2 months. Harwell, the state health department's public health and safety administrator, says the testing team is working 7 days a week and now providing same-day test results. He says local and tribal health officials have done contact tracing on over 2,000 Montanans.
So this is really good work, and it's, I think, one of the key reasons why Montana has the second lowest incident rate of COVID in the United States. I think we're second only to Alaska.
Lawmakers on both sides of the political aisle largely praised the agency for its reaction to the pandemic. Here's Helena, Democratic Representative Mary Cafaro.
We're the second lowest in the nation, and I think it's really important to recognize that that didn't just happen. It was because of a great, timely, and a very bold response.
Edward O'Brien, Montana Public Radio.
The Montana Department of Labor and Industry issued more than 55,000 unemployment payments totaling $60 million last week. The total includes regular unemployment payments, expanded pandemic assistance, and the $600 weekly addition from the Federal CARES Act. Nearly 9,000 new claims in April came from the food service and accommodations industry. More than 6,500 claims were from retail, trade, and healthcare industry each. New claims peaked in early April during Montana's stay-at-home order. A letter drafted by the Montana Speaker of the House asks Governor Steve Bullock to consider reducing government spending due to concerns of declining state revenue. Montana Public Radio's Corin Cates Carney reports.
The draft letter will be discussed by the Legislative Revenue Interim Committee next week. As state leaders continue to crunch the numbers of the economic fallout of the novel coronavirus pandemic in Montana, Speaker Greg Hertz, a Republican from Polson, says cutting state spending now could help budget balancing efforts in the 2021 legislative session.
Obviously, we've seen a crash in many of our revenues.
Hertz says he drafted the letter with the chair of the Legislative Revenue Interim Committee, Representative Alan Redfield, a Republican from Livingston. Revenue Interim Committee Vice Chair Senator Dick Barrett, a Democrat from Missoula, shares concerns for what the shutdown of the economy means for state revenues, but he says it's premature to write a letter to the governor calling for specific actions.
It's premature, and it's based simply on the speaker's speculations and Representative Redfield's speculations about what the state of the budget are.
Ahead of lawmakers' consideration of whether they want to officially send the letter to Bullock, a separate meeting of state financial leaders is scheduled for this coming Friday. The governor's budget director is expected to give an update during that meeting, along with a monthly financial COVID-19 report from legislative staff. State financial updates show Montana had a relatively high level of cash reserves heading into the pandemic. It's unclear how those savings could hold up as economic and revenue forecasts change amid the pandemic. I'm Corin Cates Carney, Montana Public Radio News.
Montana's attorney general has signed on to a letter calling on Congress to investigate the Chinese government's role in the novel coronavirus pandemic. The letter sent Saturday by 18 state attorneys general accuses China of, quote, willfully and knowingly, unquote, concealing information about the severity of the virus while stockpiling personal protective equipment. The attorneys general say China needs to be held accountable for American deaths and job losses from the virus. Chinese officials have denied the accusations, saying the U.S. government ignored early warnings in January about the emerging pandemic and is now trying to shift blame for its own slow response. Tim Fox signed on to the letter urging congressional hearings in his official capacity as Montana's attorney general. Fox is running for the Republican nomination for the governor's seat. A group backing a Montana voter initiative says it's been given the green light to collect signatures remotely in order to qualify its issue for the November ballot. Kayla DeRoche reports it's the first group to find a workaround to social distancing guidelines.
The Montana Secretary of State this month granted permission for one renewable energy ballot initiative to collect signatures remotely. If passed, Initiative 187 would transition the state to 80% renewable energy by 2034. Russ Doty with the group Montana Cares says signature gathering stalled in March due to social distancing measures.
We lost being able to collect signatures at major events, and we also lost the ability to collect signatures because people weren't getting together in large groups. So we've got to do something different, and this will help.
The Secretary of State Office's May 7th decision allows voters to download forms online, fill out and sign them, and then mail them directly to county election offices. Another ballot initiative to legalize recreational marijuana use recently lost its bid to use software called DocuSign to collect electronic signatures. A Missoula district court ruled in late April that the organizers failed to demonstrate this mode of collecting signatures is necessary. The court further expressed doubt about the security of collecting those electronic signatures. Montana Cares says it collected a little more than 40% of the roughly 25,500 signatures it needs by June to qualify for the ballot. The Secretary of State's office did not respond to YPR's request for comment by the deadline for this story. Kayla DeRoche, Yellowstone Public Radio News.
Child care is a critical part of Montana's economic recovery from COVID-19 as more parents return to work. But some providers have closed permanently and others are struggling, adding to an already dire shortage. Rachel Kramer reports recently released federal funding may only provide short-term relief as the state faces a child care crisis.
Every song she sings is to that same tune.
Liz Schultz runs Learn and Play Child Care in Belgrade.
Today is the first day back with children since March 24th was my last day open.
Before COVID-19 ramped up in Montana, Schultz provided care for 11 kids under the age of 5. She says that number started dropping during the stay-at-home order.
Because either parents were working from home or not working. So I was down to 2 children at that point, and I said, I'm not, going to keep doing this.
She temporarily closed her doors and gave parents the option of paying what they could to help keep the business afloat. But she says it's been tough. Unemployment payments for self-employed Montanans impacted by COVID-19 only opened up about 2 weeks ago, and Schultz says her application is still being processed. She said she was relieved last Thursday when the state opened the application portal for over $10 million of federal assistance. It's earmarked for Montana child care providers, low-income children, and emergency temporary child care for essential workers. As a licensed group provider, Schultz could receive $5,000, which she says would cover close to a month of her normal expenses as a business.
We applied and we can get it now, but I don't know how long it will take to actually physically get the money.
Danica Jamison, president and CEO of Greater Gallatin United Way, says some providers closed permanently as they waited weeks for the funding to open up. She says the grants will help in the short term, but the state is facing a crisis if more funding doesn't become available soon.
If we want to make sure the most vulnerable children and the most vulnerable parents and employees are able to get back to work and that kids have a safe place to be, we need to open up emergency child care programs across the state as quickly as possible.
She says that would require an additional $25 million in funding in the short term and a push for public funding in the long term. Before COVID-19, Montana had capacity for 40% of the kids who needed care. Jamison says that number will only be exacerbated as some providers are forced to close in the fallout of the pandemic.
We are facing a catastrophic child care issue for families, for kids, for businesses, and for our whole community that relies on businesses reopening.
With limits on the number of kids at child care facilities and fewer programs and camps, Jamison says medium and large providers are bringing in less income while parents face fewer options as they start to go back to work. Parents already pay more for infant care than in-state tuition at Montana State University, and yet the median income for child care workers is around $20,000 a year, according to the Montana Department of Labor and Industry.
We should not be putting this solution of how to make affordable quality child care on the providers alone or on parents alone. It demands a community collective response that needs federal and state and local dollars, business dollars, pitching in.
Tori Sproles is the provider services coordinator at Child Care Connections, a nonprofit that offers training and resources to providers and referrals to parents in Gallatin, Park, Marr, Broadwater, Jefferson, and Lewis and Clark counties. She says the COVID-19 pandemic has shown child care is an essential service.
If we weren't providing care for some of these children, then the nurses, the doctors, the first responders, all of these people couldn't be doing their jobs. And so honestly, that's kind of where my mind is going, that I'm hoping that this gives us some conversation pieces around the importance of childcare.
Sproles says more than half of the nearly 190 programs that Child Care Connection serves closed during the stay-at-home order. 5 were permanent closures. As the rest have started reopening, Sproles says she and her team have been pooling resources to supply providers with personal protective equipment and cleaning supplies. They've also been offering recommendations to help providers operate in accordance with public health guidelines. She says the governor's recent announcement about small business stabilization grants could help some providers make it through the months ahead. With Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Rachel Kramer.
Last week, the university system in Montana started to slightly relax restrictions on research and lab work, but labs across the state continue to grapple with how to keep their experiments on course. Sophia Stewart Rossi reports.
To prevent the spread of COVID-19, researchers and scientific labs across the state are teleworking if possible, slowing down their lab work, and social distancing when they get into the office.
I have a mask right now. I just took it off so that it wouldn't muffle my voice.
Emily Moore, a postdoctoral researcher at an evolutionary genomics lab at the University of Montana, took a break from her work looking at the genetic makeup of a one-of-its-kind organ, the placenta, for a Zoom call. Moore is considered an essential person in her lab, meaning she is one of a couple who are regularly allowed inside. She's required to check if freezers are working, ongoing samples are safe, and other tasks. But Moore says it's lonely not spending time with peers.
I can't wait for it to be over. I'm ready.
Other labs are cutting back on-site staffing, too. At the Flathead Lake Biological Station, more than 30 people are ordinarily researching side by side, but now only two are allowed inside at once. Adam Bauman, freshwater research lab manager, is measuring pollutant levels in water. This work helps maintain Flathead Lake as one of the cleanest in the world.
If you get bored doing it, you're doing something wrong.
Like other labs working across the state during the pandemic, Bauman has to manage how to keep research going with limited staff, which could delay when important data will be collected and create a backlog of work at the world-renowned center.
You know, the uncertainty of all this is one of the most challenging pieces. Definitely keeps me up at night sometimes.
For Montana Public Radio, I'm Sophia Stewart Rossi.
This story is supported by a grant from the National Geographic COVID-19 Emergency Fund for journalists. This morning, we're kicking off a series looking at the push and pull of the novel coronavirus pandemic on science in Montana. While some research is plagued by uncertainty and has ground to a halt, COVID-19 has fast-tracked other innovative experiments and spawned new collaborations. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports.
A key to tracking the spread of coronavirus as the state enters new phases of reopening might lie in our toilets. Postdoctoral researchers in Montana State University's Department of Microbiology and Immunology, Artem Nimudri and Anna Nimudra, are filtering wastewater that's been stewing beneath the city of Bozeman. They're on the hunt for traces of the novel coronavirus. When they're all done with filtration, they'll scan their samples using a microwave-sized machine that copies and amplifies genetic codes. With this method, Nimudri says, instead of testing people for the virus one by one,
you can test the whole community, like simultaneously.
That's because when somebody with COVID-19 poops, that waste contains genetic evidence of the virus. Scientists call it shedding. Associate Professor Blake Wiedenheft is head of the lab.
By going to the wastewater treatment plant, we could collect a composite sample over 24 hours that is an average of how much virus is being shed.
Wiedenheft says this analysis could show what proportion of the community is infected quickly and even if there aren't enough traditional testing supplies to answer that question. Policymakers can use that data to inform broader health measures. Should we reopen more of the economy or ought we stay hunkered down? Wastewater testing for COVID-19 is picking up across the country and the world, but this lab at MSU was one of the first to show that the method could be successful even in an area with a relatively low infection rate. Wiedenheft ordinarily studies the immune systems of bacteria, but like scientists across the state, his research pivoted during the COVID-19 pandemic.
What's unique about this situation is that the urgency has really pulled people together to focus on a new topic that they may not have been working on before.
The University of Montana's Center for Translational Medicine, which normally works on the common flu and tuberculosis, among other ailments, received $2.5 million from the National Institutes of Health to work on a coronavirus vaccine. Rocky Mountain Labs in Hamilton has shifted its focus from a plethora of infectious diseases to nearly exclusively COVID-related research. Michelle Flinnikin, assistant professor of plant sciences and plant pathology at MSU, usually focuses on viruses causing honeybee die-offs and other agricultural problems. But when the coronavirus gained a foothold in Montana, she realized her know-how could apply beyond the insect world.
So while a honeybee and a human seem pretty different to you, to us, they're just a host.
Flinikin and her research team repurposed the technology they used to scan bees for pathogens to scan human samples for COVID-19. With the help of colleagues in the MSU administration, she donated her lab scanning machines and expertise to Bozeman Health. The equipment allows the hospital to conduct about 60 coronavirus tests per day, boosting the state's overall capacity. Katie Doffenbaugh, manager of the Flinikin Lab, is ecstatic about her team's collaboration with Bozeman Health. She helped the hospital get trained up and begin testing.
It's a good way to kick you out of your routine and to remember the relevance of the work that you're doing.
However, Doffenbaugh has also spent more than a month out of work. After COVID-related health policies went into effect at MSU, it was no longer possible to go into the lab.
The last day I was at work was March 25th, and I'm labeling tubes, getting ready for March 26th. And then I didn't come in on March 26th, and I haven't been in since. And so I have all these things that are on my bench, ready to go. I haven't been able to touch them.
Doffenbaugh says she's lucky. She's financially stable for now. And even though it's on the back burner, her research shouldn't see that much of a setback. And her situation is common. This is the underside of the impact of coronavirus on science in Montana. At the same time that collaboration and research directly on COVID-19 has ramped up, virtually all other science has slowed to a snail's pace or halted completely. The vast majority of scientific research in Montana happens either at or affiliated with big research universities like UM and MSU. Jason Carter, Vice President of Research, Economic Development, and Graduate Education at MSU, says the university had to figure out, when it's hardly safe to leave the house, what happens to research that depends on shared space, data, and materials.
We started working on a plan that would shift and transition some of our most talented research areas to try to address this fight against it. You know, we wanted to be part of the solution.
Both MSU and the University of Montana instituted new safety and health guidelines, mostly focused on social distancing. Only research deemed essential by the universities would continue on campus.
We defined essential research as anything that would lead to, quote, irreversible data or financial loss.
He says science and research is crucial to the university and to the local and state economies. Together, UM and MSU spent over $240 million on scientific research last year, a number that's been steadily rising annually. Scott Wittenberg, Vice President of Research and Creative Scholarship at UM, says the federal government is funneling money into COVID-19 research.
I expect our research portfolio to actually grow during the next few years.
While both Wittenberg and Carter expect university science to flourish in a post-COVID world, they acknowledge that the scientific sway towards coronavirus research does leave at least some scientists and students behind. Raina Plowright, assistant professor of microbiology and immunology at MSU, studies disease spillover from bats to other animal hosts to humans. She leads a team of more than 70 people across 5 continents, and that work has grown in demand along with global attention on coronavirus.
This has affected us in an incredible way, in ways that are good, in ways that are devastating.
Of the team's most crucial field sites, work has continued in Australia, but field work has come screeching to a stop in Ghana, Madagascar, and Bangladesh. Entire countries have gone into total lockdown, and protective equipment ordinarily used to keep researchers safe from exposure to bats was turned over to the front lines of the COVID-19 response.
Now there will be a big hole in that data set. Whether that's 1, 2, 3 months, that's uncertain at this point in time. And that is a tragedy for the science. It's a tragedy to have any sort of interruption of a long-term monitoring program.
In interviews, scientists across the state voiced similar sentiments, a mixture of optimism and frustration, and amid the uncertainty, an unwavering commitment to forge ahead in their research.
But really, it's just the way that things are, and we just have to do the best we can.
For Montana Public Radio, I'm Nick Mott.
This story is supported by a grant from the National Geographic COVID-19 Emergency Fund for journalists. And that's what's happening in Montana today. Check in with Montana Public Radio's Montana Evening News for updates on the news of the day. For Yellowstone Public Radio News, I'm Jess Sheldahl. We'll have another episode of The Worm for you early birds tomorrow morning.
The Worm is produced by Jess Sheldahl for Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Meadowlark call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. Partial funding for The Worm is provided by the Greater Montana Foundation, encouraging communication on issues, trends, and values of importance to Montana. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.